This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 51. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Mike?
I bought a new laptop.
Awesome. And let's see, you've had Dells for years, so you got another Dell, is that right?
Actually, no. Well, I had Dell back in, I bought my first Dell laptop back in 2000 or 2001, I think 2000. And then ever since then, I've been mostly using Lenovo's. I kind of switched around back in 2005 or so. I tried out MacBook Pro with using Bootcamp for a little while. Worked for a couple of years or so, and then I just ditched it because Bootcamp wasn't really working very well because of the fan drivers. And what would happen is the thing wouldn't overheat so that it wasn't usable, but it would overheat so that I couldn't actually use it as a laptop or it would burn me. So
right.
I decided to ditch that, and I went with Lenovo for a couple of years. And this time I decided to try out the MacBook Air.
So that's what you got, and you get the big, the 13-inch?
Yep.
Is that right?
Got the 13-inch, and I was a little concerned about the not just the fact that it's widescreen, but the fact that the screen resolution is a bit less than what my Lenovo had, because my Lenovo was a 15-inch screen, but it was 1920 by 1200 resolution, and this is only 1440 by 900 resolution. So I was a little concerned about it, but part of the reason I ended up switching and getting this instead of just kind of keeping with my Lenovo was the fact that my video card was starting to go. And every 5 or 10 minutes or so, the video card drivers would completely reset. The entire machine would lock up for about 10 seconds or so. And then, you know, the driver would restart or whatever, and it would kind of come back to normal. But my machine would lock up for 10, 15, 20 seconds at a time. In order to get around those crashing issues, what I'd done was I actually dropped the screen resolution so that the video card wouldn't have to work as hard, and I dropped it down to 1440 by 900, and it was actually tolerable. So I was really concerned about going to it, and so far it really hasn't been an issue.
Right. I have to admit, I am so jealous of the MacBook Air. You and I have talked, and it's something I've entertained doing, selling. You know, I have a Dell I got maybe 4 or 5 months ago, and I really like the Dell, but it just doesn't compare to the hardware of the MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
So I would guess that'll be coming down the line. I think that it's like we talked about, the one issue I have with it is it seems like 4 gigs of RAM splitting between two OSs. I just feel like I'm going to be disappointed doing that. But you said that it's worked fine for you. You give, a gig and a half to Mac and 2.5 to Windows 7. Is that right?
Yep. And it's a 64-bit Windows 7 Ultimate. And so far, it seems to be running fine. I mean, I'm developing a lot of Audit Shark code on it. And so I've got all these different things running in Windows. I mean, I've got obviously the Windows operating system itself. Then I've got SQL Server. I've got the Azure Compute and Storage Services running. I've got Visual Studio 2010 running. I've got the SQL Server Management Studio running. And then plus all of the services and executables and stuff that I'm running on top of that for Audit Shark.
Right. So these are beefy apps. I mean, Visual Studio alone can suck up a gig of RAM. I hope that lasts, because if it does, I'll be probably upgrading to a MacBook Air pretty soon, even though I have at least comparable specs to a MacBook Air. I have a 256 gig SSD like you do. I have 8 gigs of RAM instead of 4. i5. Do you have an i5 or an i7?
i7.
Don't have it there. But anyways, yeah, I'm happy with what I have. But boy, that aluminum and the what is it, 1.9 pounds or something ridiculous?
Yeah, it's 3. My Lenovo was about 8 to 9 pounds.
Oh, gosh, you're kidding. Yeah. Yeah, so mine is 3.5. So I wouldn't probably save much on that. But anyways, well, congrats, man. That's a good decision. I hope things work out for you.
I've been using it for probably about a week and a half, 2 weeks now. And the only issue that I've actually run into is that with my old laptop, I took the entire thing and used VMware's tools and converted it into a virtual machine. And I'm running VMware Fusion on top of OS X. And the only thing that I've found so far, and this is really screwy, I got to go to the Genius Bar over at Shrine of Mac and ask them if they know what's causing this. But if I put the machine to sleep while it is on battery power, when it won't wake up. It just kind of goes nuts. But if I have it connected to, you know, to the power cable and to the wall, and then I tell it to go to sleep and I turn it off and then I turn it back on with it connected to the wall, it's fine. As soon as I power it up, go to battery power, and then tell it to go to sleep while it's still running on battery power, something goes haywire, and basically I guess I've done some research on it. It's called the black screen of death, where the thing wakes up, but it won't do anything. It won't respond to anything. And you basically have to do a hard shutdown.
That's not good.
No.
Well, but that's a Mac OS thing, right? It's not because you're running Windows on it.
I think it's an OS X thing. And I'm pretty sure that it has to do with some sort of process that isn't shutting down or waking up properly. I've also seen some indications that it might be the fact that I've got VMware running and it's trying to access the video card, maybe something with the screensaver. I'm not real sure what's going on, but it's a pretty specific set of conditions when it happens. So I'm pretty sure that I'll be able to eventually figure it out, or maybe Apple put out an update that'll fix it. Other than that one issue, though, I mean, this thing really rocks. It's awesome.
Right. Well, cool. Hey, so we got mentioned on siliconprairienews.com, and it's a guy named Paul Yoder, and he has a startup called Donor Elf, which is a donor management service for nonprofits. And it's pretty cool. At the bottom, Paul Yoder says, after bootstrapping the $1,000 cost of this side project and gleaning inspiration by their micropreneur vision from Startups for the Rest of Us podcast, he hopes to continue building more with Donor Elf and exploring different SaaS products. So it's kind of cool. It popped up on my Google alerts, and I wanted to thank Paul for the mention. And I also wanted to thank Mark McDonough. He wrote a review of us in iTunes on August 8th, and he says, it's a great podcast for the entrepreneurial-minded. I'm not a tech/software entrepreneur, but I still enjoy the many processes, tips, and struggles the podcast generates for me. That's cool. It's always good to know people are out there listening, being impacted by what we're doing. And then the last piece of this one's a trivia question. Mike, do you know which of our episodes is the most popular, at least according to our installation of WordPress? Don't go to the website.
I remember looking at it a while back, but I don't remember the title of it. I think it was episode 29.
It is, and it's 5 steps to beating your startup demons.
Ah.
And it's a trip. I've heard quite a few people mention this and say, you know, how it was just an impactful episode. And I remember recording it, and you and I hit a good stride that episode, but it has a lot of good content in it. So that was, what, 20 episodes ago. So, you know, if you're a current listener and you haven't listened to episode 29, definitely recommend doing it. You may have to go to startupsfortherestofus.com to download it, because I don't know if our iTunes feed goes back that far. Now, do you know what our number 2 episode is?
I want to say episode 1, but it might have been episode 26, 28.
Our number 2 episode is Movies for Nerds.
Oh, are
episode
you serious?
47.
No way.
People must have passed that around, because we got mixed feedback on that. Some people liked it and some people didn't, but that's cool. And then, our third most popular is episode 1, which I still think is kind of a trip, yeah, that it'd be that popular still. But
I don't know how those rankings are calculated, to be honest.
I mean, it's a WordPress thing. So my guess is it's most popular post. It's the most page views in a given time.
The only thing I can think of, though, is that you would almost expect episode 1 to be the highest rank, just because it's been there the longest. You know?
I'm not sure if the popular thing, popular maybe over all time, which is impressive. If episode 29 and 47 have more views than episode 1 already, that's pretty impressive.
Just means episode 1 really sucked.
I think it did. I don't think I could go back and listen to it now. That would be painful.
It might be, yes.
I was speaking in Santa Monica last week. It was this awesome, awesome crowd. It seriously might have been the highest energy crowd that I've spoken in front of. It was 100 people packed into this room, really tight. It started getting warm towards the end, and it was after work on a Wednesday night. And there was beer and pizza, and people were just like really into the talk. And of course, I just like fed off the energy, and it got me really amped. And I started making more jokes. And
did you do any magic tricks?
I did do my magic trick, and people just ate it up. Yeah, it really it went over really well, and there were applause, and there was, I don't know, there was great energy. There were tons of questions. In fact, I learned I need to put questions off to the end, because I probably got 25 questions, and I let the people ask them during the presentation, and it totally started derailing it. Not I could keep track, but like people who were watching were just like, ugh, so frustrated with it. So next time I'm going to just hold questions till the end, but Yeah, it was cool. It was at the Lean LA startup group down in Santa Monica.
Very cool.
So I really enjoyed it. All right, so today we're going to be talking about how traffic quality can make a 10x difference in your business. Today's topic was requested by a listener, and I apologize. I seem to have lost the email or the issue that was sent in. But now the info here is also based on a blog post I wrote a while back called The 9 Levels of Traffic Quality, and we'll link that up in the show notes. Traffic quality is a term that we use to describe how targeted or interested visitors are in what you have to offer. So this typically has a direct correlation with how close each visitor is to your ideal customer and how much of a relationship you have with that visitor. So to say it another way, high traffic quality means that each visitor is very close to your ideal customer and they know and trust you, whereas low traffic quality might be someone who just stumbles in from a random link, or maybe it's the first time they're visiting your site and they've come through TechCrunch.
Yeah, the TechCrunch is a great example of that, just because unless your target market is other startups, the people who are coming to your site from TechCrunch are, you really don't have a relationship with them of any kind. And the fact is that they're probably only interested in seeing what you're doing because they're looking for news or for a distraction of some kind. I mean, this is low quality traffic. It may be a lot of traffic, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's high quality traffic. I mean, these people are, their intentions are not to buy whatever product it is. However, if you take a look at people who are coming in from AdWords or from SEO that you've done, those people are actually searching for the product that you're offering, and those people are going to convert at a much higher rate because the quality of that traffic is so much better than something like a TechCrunch or a Slashdot.link.
Yeah, I regularly see a 2 to 10x difference in book purchases at my book website, startupbook.net. And depending on the source, which obviously dictates the quality of the traffic, I can literally have 2 to 10 times more sales from a particular link on Hacker News than maybe someone who, I don't know, is coming just from a direct referral through Twitter. And so the reason this is all important is because as an entrepreneur, you have to understand where to focus your energy when you're driving traffic, because obviously you could waste a lot of time and energy getting low quality traffic and it's not going to convert well for you. So if people from an email list you have, as an example, if they will convert at 5 to 10 times the rate of someone who finds your site through Google, then you can spend 5 to 10 times the effort getting people on your mailing list, and you can still have a break-even ROI. Now, I'm not saying that email lists always convert 5 to 10 times the rate of someone finding you through Google. That's just an example. But as a rule, if you do have a relationship with someone and they have subscribed to a mailing list that you have, you will definitely convert higher than, you know, someone finding your website for the first time.
So let's take a look at the, you know, one of the first steps to finding out what traffic is converting for you. And one way you can do that is you can use Google Analytics or any of the various other website analytics packages to essentially set up goals inside of that system. And I use Google Analytics for that. And it really doesn't take very long to do. Essentially, what you do is you put a piece of JavaScript on your website, and you can pull that from Google's website, and they'll show you exactly how to do it. And essentially, you embed it in there. And when somebody comes to your website and then browses through the places where you want them to go, that is considered a conversion. Now, a conversion doesn't necessarily mean they bought your product. It means that they did what you wanted and expected them to do. We're going to put a link in the show notes for you to walk through that process. It'll only take a couple of minutes, but it's not something that's easily, you know, talked about. And it's something that you guys would probably be able to follow a lot easier if you just look at a video. So we're going to provide that in the show notes for you.
Yeah, and the really cool part about goals in Google Analytics is you can set them up for anything. You can set up a goal so that when someone subscribes to your mailing list, it gets tracked, or when they actually buy something from you, or when they hit your pricing page, or whatever. And then as you're looking through all your traffic, you can narrow it down by referrer. And so you can say, oh, everyone who came from TechCrunch, this is how many signed up for the mailing list or bought something, and people who came from Google through this search term, specifically this term, this is how many bought or converted to email. So super powerful. If you're not using goals in Google Analytics, you're missing out on a major piece of functionality. With that said, we're going to move on to what we're calling the generalized hierarchy of traffic quality. It's impossible to say which traffic is best for every website, right? But based on Mike and my experience with all of our businesses and the 10 years of doing this, we've noticed a definite pattern in traffic quality based on the source. So this is general. It may vary a little bit for you, but overall, we're going to list these 9 sources of traffic in the order of what we deem as the quality.
So the first one is a mailing list. And assuming that you have a relationship with somebody and you get them on your mailing list and you're able to continuously provide value for them, they are going to look very favorably upon you when you ask them to do something. And by favorably, I really mean if you say, hey, go out and do this, chances are much better that they're going to do it than if you just spammed a whole ton of people and hoped that they were going to go click on the links that you were trying to drive them to. Or if you recommended that they buy a product, or you recommended that they sign up for this ebook or buy this ebook. There are a lot of different things that you can use those mailing lists for, but essentially you're trying to ask people to do something. And if they have that relationship with you, they know who you are, they've been regularly getting emails from you, and they value those emails, that traffic quality is going to be extremely high.
And the number 2 highest source of traffic is your blog, and that's assuming you have a relationship. Now, this probably makes a lot of sense, right? If you have a mailing list, you tend to be in someone's email inbox every day. Your blog, it's probably still going to send some targeted traffic, but at least from my experience, I know that readers of my blog often get my blog confused with other startup blogs they read. It's not as kind of as filtered as mailing lists. They're just more, at least in our niche, there are more startup blogs out there. So you can definitely still have high conversion rates and you can get people interested in products you have to offer through a blog, but it's not quite as high as a mailing list.
One thing to point out is that as we're going through these levels of traffic quality, when you're looking at applying them to your business, just because we mention one doesn't mean you have to do it. So, for example, there are a lot of businesses and a lot of products where having a blog, for example, does not make a lot of sense. Some products can be extremely difficult to build a blog for. And when you are not posting regularly, it just makes it look worse. So you can actually hurt yourself, and these things can reorder a little bit based on how well you do them. So the third best traffic source that we came up with was a referral link from a targeted website with a positive write-up about your product. And this can be as simple as having your product highlighted or sold through one of Amazon's stores. For example, if you have a book and you're selling it through Amazon, or if you have distributors, or there are other people who are affiliates and they have a sales process and they allow people to come back and write reviews on your products. Those things can convert very, very well because people will follow those links and come back and check your site for more information, because generally the manufacturer or the developer of a product tends to have more information and more up-to-date information on any given product on their website than the distributors who are trying to sell it. So the traffic that comes in from those can actually convert pretty well.
And the fourth best traffic source that we found is direct traffic. And now we call it direct traffic because that's how you'll see it in most analytics packages. What direct traffic tends to be is when someone hears about you or your product on a podcast, even if it's your own podcast, if they read about you in print media or in an online article where it's not actually hyperlinked, or if you get tweeted and someone's using TweetDeck and they click through, then it'll have no referrer. So direct traffic is anyone who's doing any of those things, as well as if the person's a repeat visitor and they may have typed your URL directly into the browser bar. So again, direct traffic versus a referral link. So that was, what Mike just said. And what I'm talking about here, I could see them swapped, and I have a couple of websites where these two are swapped. But in general, direct traffic, we rank it right below a referral link.
And the fifth traffic source is an organic search on either your product or business name. And this kind of goes a little bit with the direct traffic that Rob was talking about, because if you have a product where the domain name for that matches what people commonly search for, it will convert much, much higher. And again, that's just the nature of the beast, the way SEO works. But anyone who's doing an organic search for your product name and it comes up on the first page of Google or Bing or whatever eighth rate web search engine is out there at this point, those things are going to convert very, very well.
So the sixth level of traffic quality is Google AdWords. And again, organic search and Google AdWords are very close. And I have some AdWords campaigns that have outperformed organic search and vice versa. So five and six can be easily swapped. The idea is that Google AdWords, it really is, you're targeting someone at the point of need. And so it ranks higher than, you know, a few of the other things we'll be talking about in a minute. But it is definitely lower than any kind of traffic where you have some kind of relationship with them.
And the seventh traffic source is all other organic searches. And this is a little different than number five, whereas number five was a search on your product or business name. Number seven is all other searches that do not directly include your product name. So, for example, if you're selling .NET invoicing software and somebody searches for invoice software, they didn't put .NET invoice in it. They put in invoice software. So that is a targeted search term that you're probably doing SEO for, and you're trying to attract and people to your website who are searching for that, but it doesn't match your product name. And there are a lot of variations around that where there are keywords that are related to your product that do not necessarily match your product name.
And traffic source number eight is a referral link with no write-up or from a non-targeted website, such as TechCrunch. And this is in line with what we said earlier, that it's on the lower end of the spectrum to get a referral link where someone is not really endorsing you, but they maybe you just get a link kind of in the middle of a blog post somewhere. Or if it's, again, a website that's linking to you that's sending traffic that isn't necessarily within your demographic or has really never heard of you, such as TechCrunch.
And the ninth source of traffic is banners and other advertising. If you look around the internet, there's advertising just about everywhere. Any website that you go to that's news related or product related, virtually every single one of them has banners or ads of some kind there. And with the exception of something like Google AdWords, where it's embedded directly into the search engine, banners are more for bringing out awareness of a product, and they don't necessarily convert nearly as well as a lot of the others because they're trying to bring awareness to the product and they're not necessarily surfaced to the people as a result of something that they're doing or something that they're searching for. They generally get pushed out there for everybody. It's kind of similar to like a newspaper ad where that newspaper ad goes out to everybody, whether they may have an interest in that product or not. So, for example, people are advertising for car sales in the newspaper. Well, some people buy cars, but there are not a huge number of people who are reading the paper and looking for a car at the same time. But there are enough that it makes it worth it to do that. So banner ads can certainly help out. But again, it's on the lowest end of the traffic quality spectrum.
Yeah, so that's our list. I think the idea is that if one of these approaches applies to your niche, then do it. Start at the top. And if you can possibly build a mailing list within your niche, then start with that. And if you think that people would read a blog or that, you know, a blog will help with SEO, so if people are searching for your type of product online, then do a blog. That's number two. And then three is a referral link from a targeted website. So that means you're, you know, have relationships with bloggers or that you're doing some PR to get people to write you up. And number four is direct traffic. So that means, you know, either start a podcast, go interview on podcasts, try to do something that goes viral on Twitter. And then number five was organic search on your product name. Six is Google AdWords. Seven is all other organic searches. Eight was a referral link with no write-up. And nine is banner and other advertising. Well, cool. Today's question is from Felix Leong, and he posted a comment on the blog, and he said, "The TechZing vibes seeps into this episode when I listen to the fun banter between you two. Certainly fun to listen to. I'm interested to hear from both of you about your reading habits and approaches. Like, when would you usually decide to stop reading a book? What criteria do you use to determine the next book to pick up? How many books do you read on a monthly basis, etc.? This question came to me, as Rob mentioned, reading only the first half of Crossing the Chasm, and I'm pretty sure Rob doesn't read most books from cover to cover."
He's saying you're a slacker.
That is what he's saying. He's read that as Rob is a quitter. So, no, I'm just kidding. Mike and I know Felix. So, thanks for the question, Felix.
So, there's a few different questions that are kind of embedded in here, and I guess I'll just start at the beginning. What are my reading habits and approaches? I think that when I find a book that kind of comes across my desk that I'm very interested in, I generally take the time to read it, and I'll start reading it sooner rather than later. when do I decide to stop reading a book? I think that if I get to a point where I'm bored or I don't feel like I'm learning anything new, I'll start skimming. And if I start skimming and I'm still not picking anything up, I'll start skimming faster and faster until I get to a point where I would just say, the heck with it. And I just close the thing. I don't even bother reading the rest of it. I think for books, that probably happens a lot more than it does for movies for me, to be honest. I mean, at most movies, I'll watch them to the end just to see how bad they really are. I've probably only ever stopped watching, I think, 2 or 3 movies in my entire life. But with books, I probably stopped reading quite a few more.
Yeah, my approach tends to be similar. In general, I skim a lot of books anyways. It's very rare that I'll read a book word for word. I just kind of start skimming from the beginning. And I will tend to slow down if the book really grabs me and engages me. Now, I don't have a high tolerance for books that are either repeating something I already know or really are taking a lot of time to get to the point. I think you find a lot, especially with business books, that it's essentially something that could have been like 30 pages, but they beef it out to 250 or something because that's how big a paperback has to be. And that starts to piss me off pretty quick. If that's the case, I will either go online and find an online synopsis of it, or I'll look for like an abridged audio version, or I will just try to get the gist and ask someone about it. But I refuse to read 250 pages when there's only, 30 pages of content in it. And that's actually why, although I love Seth Godin and Malcolm Gladwell and those kinds of books, they kind of have one point and then they spend 300 pages showing examples of that point, and I don't tend to get a better understanding of it by reading all 300 pages. So I will either skim through it, or like I said, you can read, a one-page synopsis of it and really get the gist of what they're saying, although maybe without all the anecdotes surrounding it. Now, lately, I've actually moved to doing audiobooks, which just works much better with my life because I have more time where I'm able to listen to audio stuff. And I've chewed through a lot of books. I've stopped listening to several. There's one called Talent is Overrated, and it's about how it's not about talent, it's about practice. And about 2 chapters into it, I realized, wait, this is very similar to like Discovering Your Strengths and StrengthsFinder 2.0. And I skipped into a few chapters more, and it was just, I don't know, it wasn't anything new that I hadn't heard. So I ditched that one pretty quickly. The other book that I was really disappointed in lately was Reality Check, which is a Guy Kawasaki book, and it kind of collects 50, 70 of his blog posts. And I had heard so many positive things about it. And typically when I hear positive things, I go onto Amazon and I look to see if other people think so as well. And I read the negative reviews, obviously, because I'm really trying to weed things out. I don't think any of us need more books in our queue. We actually need less. This one just got so many positive reviews from everyone. But yeah, when I got into it, it felt super general. And I wasn't taking any, I call them action notes. I wasn't taking any notes of anything that I could actually implement. And if I don't do that, I know that I'm pretty much going to forget everything, within a couple of weeks anyways.
I think we talked about this before. You read Derek Sivers' new book, though, right?
Yep. Well, I listened to it on audio. It was like 90 minutes, and I'm actually listening to it a second time. I just enjoyed it. It's a quick listen, and there were some action notes towards the end that I didn't take that I remember making a note of. Like, I need to come back and listen to this. So, yeah, I'm actually in the middle of it right now.
So you made an action note to say to come back and take an action note?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I remember I was, like, making dinner at the time, and I didn't want to stop and make notes, and I knew it was a short book that I would enjoy listening to again.
Got it. Do you listen to a lot of books on a monthly basis? I mean, I certainly don't. I know that.
No, I do. I actually signed up for the Audible monthly subscription, and I think it's like $15 a month and you get 2 books. And the books typically that I'm buying are like $25, $30 audiobooks. And so it's quite a deal. And actually, my wife and I split it, so she gets one and I get one. But I found pretty quickly, as soon as I started listening, I just churned through them. And because you can listen to them at double time, like the podcasts. And so I can take a 12-hour book, an audiobook, and get through it in 6 hours and retain everything as if it was, listened to at normal speed. I mean, that's only 6 hours. So if I go on, one drive down to LA, there and back, that's a book. And so I found that I'm buying at least 3 or 4 other books each month. It's basically replaced. Anytime I hear a recommendation for a book now, I go to Audible first and I look for it in audio. And then if it's not there, then I go to Amazon and, look for it on Kindle. And if it's not there, I'm probably not going to buy it. I really am not going to buy any more paper books, I've decided, unless it's a unique circumstance.
Yeah, that just seems like a lot of time to be spending reading books. I don't even have that time. I understand you drive down to LA and back for years 3 hours, but it just seems to me like I don't find that I'm driving in that sort of a stretch where I want to listen to a book.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was working on the house this weekend as an example. I was out working on, we have a koi pond, and I was trying to fix a crack, and I spent about 2 or 3 hours with tools, and I just had the one earbud in the whole time. I was listening there while I cook dinner every night. I have it in, I'll just have it on the iPod dock, and that'll be, I don't know, I'll get, you know, again, it's maybe only takes me 20 to 30 minutes to cook dinner, but at double speed, you're getting through almost an hour of a book. And when I run errands, so I'll run out to the store, I'll run to pick the kids up. It may only be, you know, again, it's a 20, 30 minute round trip. But again, the whole time I have one earbud in. So I'll get 3 hours of audio listening done on a trip to Costco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, it's not necessarily something I'd recommend for everyone, but I find that like I ebb and flow where I really want to consume a lot at some points, and then other points I just want to kind of create more. And I've been in this period of really getting a lot of new ideas in my head, and so this has been very helpful for that.
Got it. Yeah, I'm at the complete opposite end of the spectrum right now, where I'm in create mode as opposed to consume. So
yeah, no, that makes sense. So Felix also asked, what criteria do you use to determine the next book to pick up? And I think I mentioned a little bit about it, how I do that already, but basically it's almost all recommendations. Someone will mention it on a podcast or a blog, or I'll just hear about it, you know, maybe in person. And what I always do, my steps are always go to Amazon, look at the reviews. And I try to read the bad reviews and the good ones and get an idea of whether I'm going to invest the time, because it's a big time commitment. Whether you're doing audio or reading the thing, it's a lot of hours of your life. So I want to be sure that the thing is going to be a unique perspective, that it's not going to be something I've heard 10 times before. And then I will typically, like I said, go to Audible and try to add it there, or put it on my wish list for Amazon and get to it eventually.
Yeah, I do something similar where I'll look at the reviews on Amazon, but you know, I just hear about them from different places, or I'll see them mentioned at a conference or something like that, and I'll take a look at it. Maybe if there's a synopsis available, kind of give me an idea of what it's about, and if it sounds interesting or if it sounds applicable to anything I'm doing or going to be doing in the near future, then I'll try and pick it up and give it a shot. But I think I said before, I mean, with movies, I'll give them a lot of benefit of the doubt and just to be able to say how bad it was in the future. But books, I don't do that as much because, I don't know, most of the people I talk to don't read, so, or at least they don't read the same things I do.
So there's actually a couple books I would recommend people. I know this is not what Felix asked, but I listened to the Pixar Touch, and it's the story of Pixar. It's really good. As well as the book Fascinate by Sally Hogshead. I've listened to those in the past couple months. Fascinate's a really good book for, you know, entrepreneurs, because it talks about how to position your product, essentially. And then the other one I think I've talked about before is called In the Plex. And it's by Stephen Levy, and he spent a bunch of time at Google. So those are kind of three recent recommendations. And actually, if you like, not a ton of applicable stuff for me, but it was a great story, is a Delivering Happiness by Tony Hsieh, the founder of Zappos. Unbelievable what he went through to get Zappos going. He basically had made like $30 million from his first company. And over time, he invested every penny back into Zappos to keep it going. He kind of says he sold all his real estate, like he had nothing. And if Zappos went under, he would have been broke again. But he's an entrepreneur, you know, and he has the confidence that he can turn it around and build it up again. So it's a cool story. Like I said, I didn't take any action items away from it, but that one was more like entertainment. Well, thanks, Felix, for the question. We really appreciate you writing in. And as Mike does the outro here, you can figure out if you have questions for us. We can answer them on a future podcast, or we may even devote a whole episode to them.
So if you do have a question or comment, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it in MP3 or text format to questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider writing a review in iTunes by searching for Startups. You can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes or via RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com. Full transcript, as always, is available at our website, startupsfortherestofus.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.